Then close your eyes and tap your heels together 3 times. And think to yourself, there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home. There's no place.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I am your host, P.W. Fenton. This is a very special edition of Digital Flotsam. It was born as an idea, as an experiment, to see if I could come up with a theme and then get some indie musical artists to actually write and record music with that theme in mind. I was blown away by what they came up with. I will say no more about it. I just hope you like the results as much as I did. I was born a poor white child. No, I'm not just paying homage to a favorite comedy by parodying the opening line of Steve Martin's The Jerk. I really was born a poor white child. I didn't know it, of course. I doubt many kids do. However you live seems perfectly normal as you grow up. But nowadays I realize just how poor we were. My dad quit school when he was 16 years old because that's what young men did in those days. As soon as you were old enough, you helped support the family. Especially if your 3 older brothers were off fighting a war in Europe. Soon he himself was in the army in France and finally occupying Germany after the fall of the Nazis. When he returned home from the war, he was probably ill-equipped for starting a family. But like so many of his fellow veterans, he got straight to work at doing just that. And on May 24th, 1948, I was born. Born, as my mother was fond of saying, without a pot to piss in. Mom was a colorful gal. We started out, as many people did in those days, living with my dad's parents. They were simply known as Mom and Pop. That's what my parents called them, and that's what I called them. They were like names to me, like Ethel and Fred. They were simply Mom and Pop. I don't think I actually knew their real names until I was in high school. My Aunt Lydia and her husband, Uncle Buddy, and their 3 kids, Joni, Little Buddy, and Sandy, lived there as well. I even think my grandmother, Mom, had taken in a couple of foster children, Michael and Douglas, at the time. I don't believe we were there very long. It must have been a very crowded place. We briefly lived in an apartment in another area of Staten Island, but eventually moved into a rented house back in the same neighborhood as Mom and Pop, a neighborhood known as Travis. Travis was as rural a place as you could find, on the most rural borough in New York City as you could find, Staten Island. We had 1 Protestant church, 1 Catholic church, 1 public school, a couple of farms, a small fishing industry, a power plant that Pop worked at, 1 public park, 1 swimming hole, 1 grocery store, Mazalowski's, and a handful of small businesses. Milk and butter were delivered, bread was delivered, fresh vegetables were delivered. At school, the bookmobile came once a week. The doctor came to your house when you needed him, and every year we had a 4th of July parade. Several past Digital Flotsams have recalled events of living there. It was the first school I remember, the first church I remember, the first friends I remember, and the best Christmas I remember. I grew up there with my baby sister, my mother, my father, and my grandmother on my mother's side. If I had a time machine, it would be the first place and time I would visit. In the late 50s, the landlady raised our rent and we had to move. We moved to a low-income housing project called the Berry Homes in a town called Dungan Hills. Many stories from those days have been recalled on Digital Flotsams. My attempt to become a little leaguer, my learning to be a geek, accidentally discovering my other grandfather, growing up with black families as my friends and neighbors, my dad working three jobs to pay the bills my parents would generate every Christmas, and perhaps a few stories I am yet to tell. Eventually, low-income housing became too expensive, and we moved once again to a town called Richmondtown. It was the place where the story of going to a new school and hitting my first and only home run took place, the place where I first earned my own money, and where I learned to smoke cigarettes. We moved there once as well, but only just around the corner from where we started. From there, I moved back to the west side of Staten Island, where listeners might recall stories of my first real job, my first dating, my high school exploits, the death of my mother, meeting the girl that one day would be my wife, and a few other stories. I eventually got married, moved into an apartment virtually across the street from my father, before moving into an apartment in the Newdorp Beach area, where the Digital Flotsam about my first real psychedelic drug experience occurred, where my daughters were born, and where my history began to branch off in its own direction, with its own family. So, why am I talking about all this? I mean, besides the fact that I've been talking about all this for almost 5 years now. Not too many years ago, when my dad was still alive, I went home to Staten Island for a visit. Some recent health scares had changed me from a person who spent his whole life feeling immortal to a guy feeling quite vulnerable and suddenly interested in his past. It was actually around the time I started conceiving of Digital Flotsam. Incidentally, as evidenced by the first three shows I created, I never envisioned Digital Flotsam to be so centered around stories of my own life. That just sort of happened. So during this visit with my dad back in New York, I said, "Dad, if we get the chance, I'd like to go visit all of my old neighborhoods and maybe take a couple of pictures of myself in the places where I've lived." If there's anything my dad was, it was a guy willing to do anything, especially for other people. So at some point during that wintertime visit, we got into his car and started making the rounds of Staten Island. I took pictures of the first house I lived in, the second house I lived in, the third house I lived in, the house of the greatest Christmas ever, the projects. We visited the second house that my family lived in. We visited the last house we lived in before we all moved to Florida. So much had changed. Some of the places were hard to recognize when compared to my memories. In short, it was my roots tour. I did my best to document the places of my life. It was really out of a personal nostalgia and my newly formed feelings of mortality that I did all this. Never did I realize how important this little innocent drive around town would become to me.
You can go back like a salmon swimming upstream. Even though you're wide awake, you can't stop the dream. And you can drive down the street that they used to live. And the pain has faded and nothing looks as big. But time can only change the memories, the memories you made there. And you might stay the same, but everything's changed there. You can remember, but that's all there's left to see. The members have changed, you once were so eager to leave. And how could they know? Those were your grandmother's roses, planted. The memories you made there, and time can only change the memories. Everything's changed there.
Now we leap forward a few years. I had been doing Digital Flotsam for a while now, and in each episode I had told many stories of my early life. All that has served to make me even more nostalgic. I began collecting old photos, old family records, looking up census information, tracing my family back as far as I could, which actually went back into the 1800s. And then it happened. On March 15th, 2007, my dad, P.W. Fenton Sr., who was at age 80, the picture of health, suffered a burst abdominal aorta and left us quite suddenly and way too early. He was the single greatest person in my life. Besides devastating me emotionally, that event further amplified my feelings of mortality. At the funeral in New York, I saw family members I hadn't seen for many years. In some cases, it was so long that I didn't even recognize them when they came up to me. When I got back home, I had even more reason to concentrate on my past. I had taken some of my father's photos back with me and faced the task of digitizing them for posterity. I still haven't completed that task. But it still caused a surge in my feelings of nostalgia. I began thinking about maybe making a film, maybe a video Digital Flotsam about my family history. I would have no difficulty telling the story. I had told much of it already in Digital Flotsam. The hard part was going to be showing the story. I had worked for some time in my past at creating video training programs. I was quite used to writing narratives and then simply filling in whatever I needed to illustrate visually what their narrative talked about. But this was going to be much harder. I wouldn't be able to take my camera to the past. I was going to have to make do with what I could come up with in the present. If I talked about high school, I could show it today with today's students milling about. If I talked about the apartment I lived in when my daughters were born, I could mix old stills with new footage of the old neighborhood. I began to think about the idea in that way. I thought that I could organize the whole thing by showing how these places look today, and then in each case, drifting into their past. I wondered about maybe planning another trip to New York to film as much as I could of these locations to fill whatever video space I needed. Then I thought to myself, maybe I can find a lot online. So I did. I found some great historical photos and stories and facts, all valuable assets to my project idea. And then I had a brilliant flash. Google Earth. I could use Google Earth's maps and Street View to find several places I didn't have pictures of, like the medieval-looking hospital where I was born and that my first daughter was born in. So I loaded up Google Earth. I found Staten Island, New York, and then zoomed right in the area where that hospital is. I stopped and stared slack-jawed. It was in ruins, completely unoccupied. Every window was either broken or boarded up. Weeds growing 5 feet tall, it was all but gone. Had that much changed in the very few years since I had been back to New York? Next, I searched for the last house I lived in with my dad and my sister. It was an apartment over a pizzeria. There was another apartment behind the pizzeria that my aunt and uncle had lived in. There were fig trees in the backyard. I remembered it quite fondly. I typed in the address and zoomed down to Street View. What greeted me was totally strange. There was nothing I recognized. The whole building was gone. It didn't exist. I swung my view around. Right across the street was where my wife and I first rented an apartment when we got married, where we spent our honeymoon. Only it was gone too. There was nothing there that even resembled it. I couldn't even figure out where it had been. It was so disappointing. Here were two places I was too late to document, two pieces of the evidence of my existence just gone. I began to wonder if anything else was gone. I moved the map a short distance to the projects I used to live in. They were still there. They were no longer called the Berry Homes, and almost all of the surrounding neighborhood had changed, but they were still there. I moved across the island to the house I was living in when I was in high school. The last house where both of my parents were alive, and where I lived when I first met the girl that was to become my wife. It had been a huge farmhouse at the edge of a farm, the only occupied house for miles. But there, on the screen, there was just a huge strip mall there now. On the spot where my house once stood, a Burger King. I decided to swing over to the first house that I could really remember, the one in Travis, the one at 99 Cannon Avenue, the one where I recounted the greatest Christmas ever for a digital flotsam. I wanted to check out that whole neighborhood. I typed in the address. Google Earth swooshed over to the location and zoomed in. When it swooped down, it was facing the opposite side of the street from where I had lived. I recognized it immediately. It was the driveway that my dad saw Santa Claus walking on when he was walking home from choir practice on that Christmas Eve. I had chills as I swung the view around to the other side of the street, but it was not the view I was expecting. I must have overshot the mark. I moved up and down the street. There was the house next door where the Cub Scouts met. There was the house where the Crisillos, my other neighbors, lived, who raised chickens and roosters and racing pigeons, and who grew peanuts and spearmint and fennel and sunflowers in their backyard. But where was my house? I knew it looked very different to me the last time I visited a few years ago, but this was all completely different. The house was gone. The house of my most precious memories. The house built when the country itself was in its infancy. The house with 2-inch thick floorboards held down by hand-forged iron nails. The tiny house with an upstairs and downstairs fireplace. The house I spent my most magical Christmas in was gone. Simply gone. In its place was not one, but two tall, skinny, featureless new houses. one standing where our driveway had been, and one standing a bit to the right where our house had been. Virtually everything that could have hinted at the space I once lived in was gone. Beginning to feel sad and a little desperate, I decided to look at another place in Travis, Mom's house. Remember Mom? My grandmother on my dad's side? Well, that was the very first house I lived in. Gibraltar 77328. I still remember the phone number. I had no trouble typing in the address in the Google Earth search dialog, 4380 Victory Boulevard. Google zoomed out from Cannon Avenue, swung south to the end of Victory Boulevard, and down again towards the street. I clicked on the street view. I couldn't believe my eyes. There stood an 8-foot-tall plywood fence, the house that contained all of my precious memories of my grandmother and my Aunt Lydia and my Uncle Buddy, was now some sort of a building supply warehouse. My idea of going back to these places and filming was becoming more and more unlikely. Dazed, I browsed around the neighborhood of my fondest memories, barely recognizing anything I saw. To my surprise, the tiny old church that I went to Sunday school in when I was 6 years old and I was married in 1966 was still there, looking largely like it did for all those years. Maybe it wasn't too late to document the places of my own family's history, the history I started when I was married at that church. Maybe I still had time to look at the places my wife and I had lived, where my children were born. I typed in the address of 62 Wynnham Avenue, the first address my daughters would have any memory of. When I made that little grand tour with my dad some years ago, we had actually stopped in and chatted with my old landlord there. He hadn't changed a bit. Where I was now many shades grayer and many pounds heavier, he didn't seem any different than the last time I paid him rent. Google Earth did its thing, zooming back out into space and then zooming back down to the address I requested. I clicked Street View and fell the few hundred feet to a point right in front of the house my children were born in. What appeared was most unexpected, even after what I had just been through. The house was surrounded by a plywood fence, and all the windows were boarded up. There were no signs of life. My landlord's photography store was gone, as was any trace that he or I had ever existed. When I visited Italy, I stood in places that had been in existence for more than 1,000 years. I slept in a room that was 500 years old. Yet here I was, facing the fact, in just a couple of hours, that almost all traces of my life were gone.
I pass into little time. Too fast you slip from my mind. I cast you here and I see you shine. Over and over. I count to 10, blink and I see you then, hiding like spies among desperate lives till we meet again. Lightning in luminous beams, lost kings and exiled queens, waiting in the garden of only a dream. Over and over again, over and over I count. And I see you then, hiding like spies among desperate lives till we meet again. I want you, I need. Spies among desperate lives until we meet again. I pass into little time. Too fast, you slip from my mind today.
I would give anything just to walk through that house on Cannon Avenue again, to walk up the stairs and look out the window I was looking through when I saw Rudolph's glowing red nose guiding Santa's sleigh. To walk into the kitchen where I used to take baths in the sink, to stand in the living room where I once stood dressed as Superman. I would love to walk through my grandmother's house, to look for the little table with the black telephone she talked to my father on every single night, as long as there wasn't a thunderstorm, to climb the stairs and go to her bedroom and pick up the binoculars off of her dresser that she used to look through to see her husband working at the power plant across the street, to see the kitchen and smell the toast she used to make for my lunch, to smell the hand soap that I had only smelled in her house and nowhere else. I would love to go back to the house where both of my children were born and walk through the alleyway where I often passed my landlord, me hoping that he wouldn't ask about the rent and him avoiding the subject because he knew I couldn't pay it. To walk into the tiny room that once was my landlord's strange cocoon of a bedroom that became my photo darkroom. To stand in the living room where I watched on a 16-inch black-and-white TV the first season of Star Trek, as well as Men Walking on the Moon, and where I watched in horror as my dog Nigel, looking straight into my eyes, lifted his leg and peed on my most precious record albums. I can never do those things. Those people are gone, and those places are gone. I was born into a culture where change was the goal, where the old way was the thing we were rebelling against. I was born into a young country whose pride rested in its difference from what had been done before, where people actually buy old homes so they can tear them down and build a brand new, more poorly built home. I can never go home again. The places that were my home are gone. Actually, gone. Only traces exist now. On the pages of a decaying photo album. On the scratchy surface of an 8mm film. On a few spoken memories. Recorded as digital flotsam. This was a very special edition of Digital Flotsam. One of the most difficult parts of putting these shows together is finding supporting music that fits what I want to do and is legal for me to play. So some considerable time ago, I got the idea to do a show where I might convince some of my favorite indie artists to actually write and perform music to fit a planned topic. It took forever to pull it off. First, because inspiration cannot be scheduled. And second, because inspiration cannot be scheduled. But today, it became a reality. I need to do some thank yous. I approached many musical folks with this idea, and you have heard the folks that were up to the task. I can't believe how wonderful all their work came out, and how wonderfully it fit, considering all I gave them was a few sentences describing the theme. First, let me thank Smitten Bayou, who contributed the song Finally Forever. Smitten Bayou is the collaborative project of Don Maselli of The Don and Drew Show and Paul Bland of paulbland.com. Next, I'd like to thank Monk. What can I say about Monk? Monk is one of the guys who was first to embrace the concept of indies creating music for podcasts. Monk has created all kinds of music for podcasts, for albums, for TV, and for films. He contributed the song One by One for this project, and I love him for it. I had the great good fortune to meet him on my very first trip to Los Angeles when we both made the trip for a mutual friend's surprise birthday party. finally, I approached Mike Errico. Mike is one of those guys where the first time I heard his music, I just rushed out and bought everything available by him. To call myself a fan would be an understatement. Mike actually wrote a song for this show and recorded it that I have never heard. When he started to record it, he decided it just wasn't right. He decided to send me a different one that he thought might fit the show. Another one that he had been working on and that was as yet unreleased. I flipped. It was the song Count to Ten. So there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. And I think I just now realized that this edition is perhaps the best explanation for Digital Flotsam I've ever come up with. Thanks again, Monk. Thanks again, Don Maselli and Paul Bland, collectively known by the great name Smitten Bayou. And thanks again to Mike Errico. I will place links to all of their respective endeavors in the show notes at digitalflotsam.com. and .org. And of course, no show would be complete without the voice of a very young Alex Waller saying that
P-Dub holded the microphone.